It's January 31st, 2017, a momentous year already. And this is Inside Out, the Naked Truth from the Santa Cruz Mountains, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge,
where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
I'm Errol Strider.
And I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition with all its eccentricities and what to make of it, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and the many voices of Errol Strider.
Our show is sponsored by our good friend Jeremy Bead from Wiley, Texas. We've known Jeremy for many, many years. Fellow sojourner, spiritually focused. And Go Raw, natural raw food that tastes good and is great for you. The way I like to say about Go Raw, nutritious and delicious.
Pretty good. Can't get past that one.
You sure can't.
So, Errol?
Yeah. First of all, I want to say thank you to all the citizens of the universe for cooperating as well as you can to help each other along. And we'll be joining you as soon as we can. But in case you forget, remember is the featured phrase for this week's conversation. Let me ask you a question. Is it easier to forget or harder to remember? Should I do that again?
Okay.
Is it easier to forget or harder to remember? That's kind of a Zen thing.
I think so.
Remember the days before the Trump presidency? Starting to look a little better now, aren't they, huh? Okay. Remember when you were young and idealistic? If not, here's the good news, in case you forgot. You can be old and idealistic.
Thank God.
How, you might ask? Well, that's what we're going to look into tonight, to see how the idealistic interfaces with the pragmatic and the apparent. For you wannabe idealists, if you're looking for the pony and all the pony poop, remember this. No matter what, you have the capacity to be creative in any circumstances you find yourself. And before I forget, remember to set your soul ahead at least one generation, for that's the kind of perspective it will take in order to set ourselves aright. And there you have it. So remember, for access to viable options and create a healthy society, listen closely.
I was thinking about remember, and I remembered a lot. But what we remember says a great deal about how we envision our journey. To the journeyer, where we are going is important to remember. The things we learned along the road, where the potholes are, where the road narrows, where it widens. Remember what we need. Awareness, gratitude, forgiveness, all wrapped in our sack of love. Remember to include those kindred souls along the way. If we remember the journey, the journey will be more joyful, more filled with memories for the next leg of the trip. So, remember.
Indeed. Speaking of remember, I was listening to a fellow by the name of Christopher Hitchens yesterday. And Christopher Hitchens is an atheist. That's his gig. Puts that out there. He's written a book about it. He's very articulate and very funny. He has a great sense of humor. What he allowed me to do was look at my life that has been, for the last 40-some-odd years, spiritually driven. But what Mr. Hitchens allowed me to do was to consider, well, what if none of that's real? Really, what if none of it is real and it is just kind of happenstance, random universe happening. It's all just by chance that this highly complex, organized organism who's able to think and talk and communicate and be a part of a radio show and the outgrowth of the technology that made the radio show happen is just a pure coincidence. How would I feel? I've come to the place where I think I'm an agnostic. For all these years of thinking I was a theist, an agnostic in the sense that I don't know. I know what I'd like it to be like, but when it gets right down to it, it feels like there's a divine partner, progenitor, a source of reality that continues to impart presence to reality, that's surcharging the thrust of evolution, that's animating all the particles. Indeed, it feels like this Big Bang was this divine being sneezing. And out of that sneeze came all these particulates, the zillions and zillions of particulates. The universe wanted to blow itself up into as many little, tiny, tiny little parts infinitely. And then through evolution, go about the process of gathering them all up and see what they found out while they were out there as little particulates and see what they bring back. The thing that they bring back that makes the infinite source of all of it just kind of clap his hands and just so excited is they bring back a body of experience. And the experience is the only way we could surprise the all-knowing. I know that's a contradiction, but there you have it. Remember?
It's interesting. I remember some things of what you just said. Huh. Enough for me to reply.
Go.
When someone believes something, I think it dictates how they live their life. There's a certainty in saying, I mean, it's all random, it's all happening. Well, what's my participation in that randomness? Did he address that at all? What his participation is in that randomness? Why would he make choices in a particular way? What governs those choices within him? Did he address that?
Yes, he got into it some, and I like to read his book to see more about what he says. What source is what we would call a moral choice, for example, a choice for being kind and gracious and generous and put your foot down when you need to and all those other choices that we make? What's the guiding orientation behind it all? Is there one? It seems to me that there is one, at least how it produces certain feelings is a way of charting our way. I'm not saying that it is. If it produces anger, hostility, hate, and fear, or if it produces joy and warmth, openness and gladness, humor, and delight. At the very least, those two directions, feelings, set of feelings, are a hint from the universe of which way is going to feel better, at least.
I remember somebody, spiritual guru, talking about what we all want is to feel good. And that's the bottom line, is to feel good. Our belief systems, if that's the bottom line, we all want to feel good, then we would pick a belief system that makes us feel good. Then that's the bottom line. I mean, what happens afterwards, after people die, which is so much part of people's belief systems, there's something else. That there's something more and what that looks like, the patterns of that. But how we live our life, there's something in us, when you get rid of all the dross, propels us towards something higher.
That's why we've developed our own dross sucker. It's a new machine.
Remember this one, everybody. We'll ask questions at the end.
Technology, the dross sucker. It will suck up all that dross that's in your system, that dross that looks like misgiving. Just sucks misgiving out of you. If you let it, it'll suck that, I don't think it's going to work, cynical attitude out of you. There you go. it'll suck out the, there's something must be wrong with me because I just don't like myself. Pulls that right out of you, that draw suck.
I can't believe that we're born with I don't like myself. You look at every baby who comes onto the planet. Every baby looks clean, just clean little slate. So there's the parents, the way the baby is treated, all this goes into it. I don't think there's one answer to you have a spiritual life, you have a not spiritual life. More than anything is, how do you live your life? Do you live your life apart from everybody else? You're exclusively you, or do you live your life with other people?
One thing we know from the study of foster children, children that do not have good bonding with a caretaker, for whatever reason, they're an orphan or maybe their parents died or whatever, they don't get a chance to bond with the caretaker. Those children, as they grow up, become very disoriented and they can be very harmful. It's almost like they're amoral. It seems like there's a connection between connecting and a morality that works for our mutual benefit.
I like that. I'm going to remember that. Mutual benefit. Remember.
While you're thinking about that one, because we're talking about beginnings, we're talking ends, but let's see if we can remember a beginning, shall we? I was remembering a beginning, and that would have been Elephant Revival. I love the lyrics. In the middle of it is turning, wild and yearning for everything. Remains inside these changing skies, through weeks in time remembering. And the last stanza, the weight to own how the sparrow knows, through the days they've flown. How everybody's wondering what has seen these skies below, up high, what the skies have seen, remembering a beginning. Speaking of remembering, we had an experience the last 24 hours that was very traumatic for us. It brought up a lot of memories in a backhanded, sort of unexpected way. We found out we have some stuff in storage. Michelle can share her version. I think she has the bow tie version with the pretty... No, you had actually the other kind of version. Anyway, our stuff was in storage near where we are, and it got broken into and dispersed everywhere and mess, and it got rained on, and there was water everywhere. We felt violated. We finally went down and looked at it. Now, Rochelle, you can tell your part of the story about your reluctance to go down there and then what happened for you.
Oh. Remember that we moved here about 3.5, almost 4 years ago and divested ourselves of 30-some-odd years of stuff. Now, if anybody's ever heard George Carlin, we know what stuff is all about. It's a real noose around your neck. And it's very painful to go through it. Divest yourself of it. It's almost like get rid of it all and not think of it again. But then there's the things that are memories, the memories that we have in photographs and things themselves. I remember that when I got that and what it meant and all that stuff. So we pack everything up and we put it here in a shed. I don't feel good about that at all. I don't feel good about it being in a shed. I just refuse to look at it. The 3.5 years, I would not walk into that shed. I thought, if I go into that shed, I'll just start to cry.
That's what happened.
What happened is that whoever broke into our photographs, millions of photos. And all of a sudden, I saw a picture of my mother and father when they were courting. It was an old picture, really part of remembering that these people who were my parents were young ones. It was face down in the dirt. And something broke in me that someone would want to interrupt my memory, would want to besmirch it, make it yucky. I just cried. And then we took all these photos, at least the ones we found so far, and they were stuck together because of the dampness and the fact that they'd been thrown on the ground. And we spent a long time since yesterday till this morning peeling them from each other. So they could dry. And in the process, and this is the good news, we got to look at pictures that we'd forgotten we even had. People who are since departed, and we got to see them. And it was quite lovely, actually. It was beautiful.
It was a trip down remembering lane.
It was a trip down remembering lane, and we remembered a whole lot of things around those pictures. Well, the picture is just a second in time, but everything that came before it and came after it is in our memory. So we remembered whole lots of things about that. So there was the silver lining in the very dark cloud.
Hello, this is Rabbi Greenberg. I love the silver lining, except it's heavy. It weighs a lot. But it doesn't weigh as much as the gold lining. And did you know they used gold thread in the days when the royalty made the dresses with gold thread? People put their money in the lining of their clothes. Because they had silver lining in the clothes when they were going on a trip and they were scared that somebody would break into themselves and their person and have it stolen. Which is why I like to tell people, remember, they can't steal you. You are unstealable.
Rabbi, you know that people are stealable. You can steal their bodies all the time by killing them. And you steal them, but you don't steal their soul, at least what I believe. But you definitely can steal their bodies. We are all witness to that one.
I can't argue with that, of course. But the you that you are, this is, I think, be the atheistic guy, Mr. Hitchens, may not be sensitive enough to feel this presence that exists as something between us that makes us reach out to each other in love and it persists. The other thing I would like to offer him as an option, if he can't believe in God or religion, consider unity as the thing that is behind everything and the thing itself that you can worship and orient yourself to. That's unity. Not just any kind of unity, a unity where the energy is moving freely and happily between all the people sharing the unity. That's what you should remember.
I'm going to do my best to remember.
So the lesson we got from this theft is a lesson we continue to get. That is, no matter what happens, I can turn it into, at the very least, a lesson. And then possibility of new options appearing and new choices as a result of that new manifestation of this very experience thing that we're gathering up, that we are bringing back with us as we move toward greater and greater unity. And it's this dynamic between the compulsion toward unity on one hand and wanting to just spritz everywhere all at once, gallivanting around, making choices. And the two together are happening. That dynamic, that relationship, that pattern, that partnership is the source of being something I can truly worship and devote myself to, which I am.
I have a litmus test for any belief system. And of course, maybe that's a belief system too. My litmus test is, does it bring you into greater unity with yourself, others, and the mystery, whatever mystery is out there? Because no matter how atheistic or agnostic you right. might be, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you have to admit you know nothing about, because that's right. the mystery. I was looking at the stars the other night. Oh, the sky was so dark. The stars were really prominent. And I was thinking, there's so much out there that we know nothing about. We don't know enough to go that far and to be witness to it. As far as we go, we probably there's more to go and there's more to go. So even if you didn't believe in anything else, you have to believe that that infinite thing that you're looking at all the time is beyond your comprehension.
That's a good start, isn't it?
And it's humbling to realize that there's something so much bigger than we are.
If I may step in here, this is Professor Umbridge. It is a strong compulsion on our part to know something, and we seek not only to know it, but to name it, thinking that if we can name it, we can know it. And in fact, naming it isn't all that it's cracked up to be. Doesn't necessarily lead to knowing it. There was one of your great writers, our great writers, I think he was American, who wrote A Stranger in a Strange Land. They talked about knowing, and is another advanced state of knowing, which was called grokking. Grokking implies that you fully grasp and digest and interpermeate with the body of knowledge that's showing up in whatever way it is, as a living form, as an obstacle, some ideas or possibilities. As you allow yourself to interpermeate, to grok whatever it is you're experiencing, then you are actually developing a new phenomenon in reality that is part you, part the thing you're experiencing, and part the steady state of reality that just keeps on going. Remember?
Try to remember the kind of September when life was slow and oh so mellow. Try to remember the kind of September when grass was green and grain was yellow. Try to remember the kind of September when you were a tender and callow fellow. Try to remember, and if you remember, then follow. Follow. the kind of September when no one went except the willow. Try to remember the kind of September that dreams were kept beside your pillow. Try to remember the kind of September when love was an ember about to billow. Try to remember, and if you remember, then follow. Fire of September that made us mellow. Deep in December, our hearts should remember and follow.
That was the Brothers Four. Singing Try to Remember.
Which I remember well.
That brought me back a deep memory. When I first really heard that song, I did the show that it was from, which was the Fantastics. It was an off-Broadway show forever. Like, it had the longest run.
Is it still running?
It could be. You know, I think the original star's great-great-granddaughter played the same part. That's a song from the show. And I played the father of the ingenue part, the girl. I remember putting on this makeup to make myself look older enough to be her father, which would be 20-some-odd plus years less than I am now. The upshot is this. I don't need the makeup.
I know. I played a part when I was in my 20s of an older woman, probably about the age I am now. I remember, and the makeup that I used, and I look at it, I look a lot older in that makeup than I do today, which is nice. I remember looking older than I am now.
Really? That's funny, with the makeup.
The makeup.
That's kind of a sort of a weird kind of foreshadowing, isn't it? Would you say so, Professor Schnitzel? Excuse me, my mind went blank. Oh, yeah, I understand. Minds go blank, especially when they stop working. They are like such a blank, but then they are like a blank slate. One of the great philosophers said, I think it might have been John Stuart Mill or someone along that line, Locke, one of those British philosophers who first suggested that we are like this clean slate. And that was a major breakthrough. Before then, you were not a clean slate. You were a piece of drag, universe drag, a sinner that you came in sin and pushed you, and it was all around you, and you were sin, and you had to be rescued from the sin. It made a very good business for church businessmen for many, many centuries.
Yes, the sin business was very good.
Very good, the sin
business.
I
remember.
They made a lot of money. Look at the Vatican. It doesn't look like a poorhouse to me. But the main thing is to remember is that there's always another perspective. And big part of living was to find a perspective that takes you into that greater sense of feeling good about yourself and feeling good about your relationship with others. As a matter of fact, remember, when it all comes down to it, it's all about relationship. You want to worship relationship, that's a good place to start. Make the relationship work for you, and you will see nice things will happen. I remember.
I will remember, because it's easy to remember.
Then there are things that I forget all the time. Like, I can come into any space and have something in my hand, put it down, and before I can turn away, I've forgotten where it is.
Or even what it was.
Well, I was going to say, that's coming more often.
What was it I put down, and now where is it?
I go out at night and I jump on a rebounder a long time, 20 minutes, jumping, jump, 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 jump. My body loves it. And I have a timer I take with me, and I've had three timers, and I bring them in the house, and all three have disappeared.
It's maybe just, you don't bring them in the house.
You know, I don't remember.
You know, when you used to do hypnotherapy?
Yes.
And a lot of it gets people to help people to remember certain things. So maybe we need to hypnotize you to find these timers.
Okay, I'm going to go into hypnotic state right now.
No, don't, because we're doing this radio.
Well, I've always wanted to know if you could do this radio in a hypnotic state. Let's imagine that I'm in a hypnotic state and I've been hypnotized, believe that all the people around the earth are recognizing that we need to come together and make it an earth-friendly place to be.
I like that.
They're all starting to assemble, and they're recognizing in each other that same desire of the heart and the love that's there. And they begin to realize and remember how that love is within them. By having it manifest outside them, it creates a resonance that creates almost a tone in their shared beingness, in that love that begins to reach out in the form of music. And we have this phenomenon that grows out of nothing at any given moment, which is music. And the music is amazing. And yet, what is it? It's this passing sound.
Well composed.
It can be.
And that's what makes it music, that it's composed. Otherwise, it's just sound, which you can think of as music. But for most people, music is composed. Even if it's atonal, it's still composed.
Usually, as I've been listening to various classical composers, I realize they were just jazz musicians, too. They just wrote it down. Like Beethoven especially, he would take a particular series of notes or chords and he would build a whole symphony around it, just improvising. Let's do it this way. Ba-ba-bum, ba-ba-ba-bum. And he became Michael Jackson, several centuries later incarnated. I don't really remember that. I tried to remember it, like the guy said. Try to remember it.
When you say, like, jazz musicians, you think every jazz musician just improvises. Jazz music is written down. It's not all improvised. That's why you can have people play it over and over again, the same thing. But you riff in the middle. I don't agree with that, that's all.
What don't you agree with, though?
That classical music is just like jazz, but written down.
Oh, okay. Well, what about you, listener out there? Do you agree with Rochelle or do you agree with me? Now, here's a free state to get to. It doesn't matter whether you agree with me. Boy, that is such a freeing thing. Like, it really doesn't matter to me whether I won the popular vote or I just won the parts in me that chose to elect me as being president of me. Because that's all that matters. I am president of me. And if the popular vote went for someone else, in other words,
the popular vote went for them.
But I don't need to be popular anymore, even though I remember this. When I was graduating from high school, this to me is really getting naked here and sharing something I don't know that I've ever shared you because I was kind of embarrassed by it. So let's get naked.
Because if you're naked at Lupin, nobody looks at you.
But here's the story. See, when I was graduating high school and you had to write something in your yearbook, and I wrote these initials, TGS, and this is like revealing a part of myself. You know what? TGS stood for?
No.
To go steady.
That's all you wanted?
And here I am. I've gone steadily with you for 40 years.
Oh, more than that.
Yeah, it made me want to revisit those three letters and maybe think about something else.
That's not even funny. TGS, that's what it meant, to go steady? You wanted a steady girlfriend, huh?
Well, there you have it.
Well, that's naked. I didn't want a steady boyfriend. I didn't want a boyfriend. I think it's because there was such a push by my girlfriends, my sisters in high school, to have a boyfriend. It was the sole desire of girls, for the most part, was to have a boyfriend, that I didn't want it at all. It's like, I just didn't want to join the tribe. I wanted to be my own person and not have to depend on having a boyfriend to make me special or not special.
I'm trying to think back of what was my motivation.
You were lonely.
I think I was lonely, but I think more than that, I wanted a steady lay.
You said that just now.
I became more and more aware of that the more I moved through puberty and into young adulthood. The sexual pull of life became really insistent. It kind of got me kicked out of school. Actually, it did get me kicked out of school.
You can't just say that and not tell the whole story, because if you say just that, you'll whet people's appetite. Right. What the hell is he talking about?
Let me remember,
we're
curious
on the radio.
Yeah. Well, I'll just say this much about it, that I chose to live in what they called unapproved housing at the University of Missouri, other land-grant colleges. Lincoln created all those land-grant universities and colleges, I just found out recently. But one of the rules there, you couldn't live off campus or in unchaperoned places until you were 23.
When?
1914.
No, remember what year it was.
1961. Four, actually, is when it happened.
Probably
63.
7 years later, it was totally different.
Anyway, so I moved into it because I wanted to have a place where I could bring girls. So I would say that was a sexual thing. And then they found out that I was living there because a whole bunch of criminal and crazy stuff happened to call their attention to me. And when they found out that I was living there, they asked me if I would like to just depart myself from not just one college. I was going to two colleges at the time. One was the University of Missouri. The other was a women's college, which I've shared with you on this program, Stevens College. It's the ideal place for a really horny guy to find himself.
Who wants to dance?
And fortunately, I got to be there because I got this dance scholarship. Oh, and there I was inside the hen house.
The rooster.
Inside. Anytime I wanted to go. And that was really significant. There was like 2,000 girls. The guys from university couldn't come into certain places in their campus, the girls' luncheon room. But I could go in there because I was they used to call them Stephen Susies. I was a Stephen Stewart's. They called us.
You don't remember what they called you.
Oh, they called us Sammies because the guy who was my mentor, really, his name is Sammy Bays, and he's the guy that got me. He was the top male dancer at that time, and he inspired me. He was great, so they called us Stephen Sammies.
And he went very many of you.
No, there were like four at any given semester. So there was
four
men students in the dance department.
And how many women?
A couple thousand.
Oh, my God. The odds were pretty good.
I love those odds. But while we're thinking about those odds, I really wanted you to hear this singer tonight. We played her last week on this song by Jim Brickman, and I just fell in love with her, and I'm always falling in love with these new voices. So let's give Beth Nielsen Chapman the attention she deserves.
I was swinging on the swings when I was a little girl, trying to get a handle on the big wide world. When I noticed all the grass and the cracks in the concrete, I said, where there's a will, weak and the strong. Life holds on. There was a third grade boy that we knew in school. He was found face down in a swimming pool. And as they worked on that kid, every minute was an hour.
Life Holds On by Beth Nielsen Chapman. She used that metaphor, the grass breaking through the concrete. I've used this metaphor before. You talked about hypnosis. That's one of the ways I described hypnosis when I was out on the road doing it, was if you let that old thought system, if you don't feed it, imagine this concrete, it just dries out. And the real, live, living conscious, the blades of grass, will come through even all this rough exterior. What hypnosis does is really breaks up that rough exterior of that old rotted concrete so that the life can emerge into our consciousness and our awareness. Yay!
You know, there's more and more moments in my life when that breaks through, when the real consciousness comes through the barnacles of the past disappointments, past betrayals, past whatevers, and breaks through, and it's so delicious. I look at our granddaughter, who's going to be 2 this month. She's still a clean slate. When I watch her and I realize she's in me, that same innocence exists within me. When I move away all those things, the memory of it allows it to come forth. The memory of my own innocence allows it to be on the outside of me.
Hi, this is Barney here, and I love that to remember, and it made me think about the capacity to remember something and to bring it about the innocence. I was thinking about what you were saying there earlier, Errol, about the atheist fellow here, and what could he actually worship? You could look at the whole thing about innocence. When you look at something and it's fresh and it's brand new and it never really happened exactly like that, as familiar as it may look, if I pay really close attention, if I remember to pay close attention to that, I am reminded that reality is surfacing for my participation and enjoyment and challenge all the time. If I approach it with the innocence, I love that innocence you were talking about. I get a brand new experience that gets filed back in my experience bank. And whenever I want to and can, I can remember that experience and call it out and revisit it and see how it's doing and how it likes to do in light of this experience that is currently happening.
It's bringing the past into the present so you can enjoy it even more.
Except you don't want to bring the part of your past that still hasn't learned how to get along with itself, where there's something happened in the past and it was painful in some way, At that time, you weren't able to resolve the pain. And then, of course, that can grow into big bats of unforgiveness and grievances and all that. And you can spend your whole life, a lot of people do, trying to bring that piece of past together because they were so abused in that moment. They never get over it. And that's why one thing people can learn and can have is the resolution to that. They can have that resolve through this phenomenon that I learned from a spiritual teacher. So I don't know where you learn it from. I learned it from a spiritual teacher.
Who is that? Who was your spiritual teacher?
They call him Jesus, Jeshua ben Joseph. He had a capacity for demonstrating forgiveness in the face of circumstances that it would be hard to forgive. It's funny you mentioned that, Martin, because as Christopher Hutchins, a self-proclaimed atheist, one of the things they were talking about was that scene on the cross, the line, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do." And he took great exception to that. That's just not something that fits in my worldview.
That's what he said.
In so many words. I'm going to listen to more of him because I liked his analysis and his wisdom and humor. I feel enriched by having a point of view that's so, well, different than what mine has been. Maybe he'll convert me. Although he made it very clear, he is not interested in converting anyone, just his take on life. But, he says, don't try and convert me, please.
To anything. Well, I don't think anybody has to convert anybody to their way of thinking because that seems anathema to being in union with people. If you find unity, then you have to allow people to have their own belief systems as long as it doesn't hurt you in any way. Because that's the part that's scary to me is somebody's belief system is so dominant in their consciousness that they can't allow anybody else's belief system to enter. And that leads to getting rid of them, hurting them. Holocausts all over the world. Genocide for that very reason. I won't allow you to have your beliefs. They're scary to me. Off you go.
As a beginning, you can look at yourself, your reality, your belief systems, and you can see if you want to recognize where some of it is just total bullshit, illusion, and it's just fabrication of your mind.
If it's your belief system, that would be very hard.
At a certain point, that is what is challenged.
You question your reality.
Yep.
It's the first step toward freedom.
This is Father O'Malley there. The first step, you have to be wanting to change there. It usually doesn't happen, the change, unless the change is wanted. Of course, change can drop on you like a lead ball, and then it'll force you to want to change because the change itself is so uncomfortable unless you change. You'll be still underneath the change that's causing you all the discomfort.
Whoa, I think I remember that one.
Well, and so what I want to say there, if you want to change, a lot of people don't realize this, but if you want to change the world, guess what? You have to start by changing yourself. I can promise you, there is something in your life that could use some changing, whatever. The way you can know that to be true is if you bump into something that you want to murder. And that's a good sign. I'm talking about the person now. I'm not talking about the ant. Although later down the line, we might be looking at why we want to step on an ant. That's another thing. But if you have this impulse to deny or negate or separate yourself from someone else, that's something that you probably could look at as an option for change. Remember, nothing ever stays the same in the universe. Everything is constantly changing, and you'd be wise to keep up with the changes. Not the Joneses, mind you. The changes.
I was listening to something the other day about how with this coal and the coal miners, Trump's pledge to them that they get their jobs back. This man said their jobs have not been lost by going overseas. It's the technology that makes it obsolete. To use coal is just ridiculous. It's expensive and it's dirty. So they're not losing their jobs to overseas people. They're losing their jobs because coal has become obsolete as an energy source. Unless they want to figure out a way. I thought of that this morning. They figure out a way to take the coal out of the ground and turn it into diamonds.
Now we're talking.
Because it does happen.
You need a really strong fist
I wouldn't do it with your hands.
Before I let you go, I have to tell you, I did something today that I can scratch off my bucket list. I roofed a building, and I put that black gooey stuff underneath the roof paper stuff, and I hammered in the nails across the roof. It was something. My good friend Jim was kind enough to guide me through that process. I don't know if I could say that I'm a roofer, by golly, but I feel like I'm part of the roofering community. So all you roofers out there, it's good to know you. It's good to have a sense of what roofing feels like in my body.
And he's got sores all over his fingers and neck and face to prove it.
I will say Jim was right when he said that that black stuff is really hard to get off. It needs, what is it, kerosene to take it off? Listen, this show couldn't happen, and it's been a great show, and it's the kind of show that I know I'll remember. Well, I don't know I'll remember, because I might forget
where you put
show,
things as
what
well.
I remember, and it could go the way of the timers. But I do want to thank Jeremy Bead again for supporting us and the great folks at BBS Radio.
That's right.
Anyway. And I want to thank the great folks at the BBC Radio, too. By golly, they're like also great folks. And I want to thank Go Raw for being our sponsor and allowing us to share this with you. So before we get to the thing that we always ask you to remember, let's see if there's anything in particular you want them to remember. Anybody have something you wanted to remember? Senator Beauregard. Well, if I'd ask them to remember anything, I would like people to remember that is the people who are in charge of the government. And I would say the people are doing a good job because the people are the ones, as it appears to me, that have selected your current leadership. So you better be careful. It's like, be careful what you pray for. Be careful what you want and expect.
Be careful what you vote for.
The people to do. Because the people includes all the people, the ones that agree with you and the ones that don't, the 99% and the 1%. So when you say the people under the people, by the people, and for the people, you better know you're up for some challenge. So what I recommend to remember is that you all have the same set of goals, and that is to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and last but not least, secure the blessings of liberty, not just to ourselves, but to posterity. If you remember that, you're going to do good. By the way, I had a phone call from posterity just today here, and they said, we would like you to create some things that when you remember, when you're a part of us and we are posterity together, you'll look back on and say, oh, that was a good memory. But I think it's about time for us to call it a night. What do you think, Errol? Well, thank you for reminding me. It actually is time for us to call a night. I want to thank you all and ask, well, Rochelle, what do we need to remember?
We need to remember that resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Remember,